As Dr. Young points out, the theory of the archetypes is by no means his own invention. Compare Nietzsche. In our sleep and in our dreams, we pass through the whole thought of earlier humanity. I mean, in the same way that man reasons in his dreams, he reasoned when in the waking state many thousands of years. The dream carries us back into earlier states of human culture and affords us a means of understanding it better. Compare Adolf Bastian's theory of the ethnic elementary ideas, which, in their primal psychic character, corresponding to the Stoic logoi spermatikoi, should be regarded as the spiritual or psychic germinal dispositions out of which the whole social structure has been developed organically, and, as such, should serve as bases of inductive research. Compare Franz Boas. Since Weitz's thorough discussion of the question of the unity of the human species, there can be no doubt that, in the main, the mental characteristics of man are the same all over the world. Bastian was led to speak of the appalling monotony of the fundamental ideas of mankind all over the globe. Certain patterns of associated ideas may be recognized in all types of culture. Compare Sir James G. Fraser. We need not, with some inquirers in ancient and modern times, suppose that the Western peoples borrowed from the older civilization of the Orient the conception of the dying and reviving God, together with the solemn ritual, in which that conception was dramatically set forth before the eyes of the worshippers. More probably, the resemblance which may be traced in this respect between the religions of the East and West is no more than what we commonly, though incorrectly, call a fortuitous coincidence, the effect of similar causes acting alike on the similar constitution of the human mind in different countries and under different skies. Compare Sigmund Freud. I recognized the presence of symbolism in dreams from the very beginning, but it was only by degrees, and as my experience increased, that I arrived at a full appreciation of its extent and significance, and I did so under the influence of Wilhelm Stekel. Stekel arrived at his interpretations of symbols by way of intuition, thanks to a peculiar gift for the direct understanding of them. Advances in psychoanalytic experience have brought to our notice patients who have shown a direct understanding of dream symbolism of this kind to a surprising extent. This symbolism is not peculiar to dreams, but is characteristic of unconscious ideation, in particular among the people, and it is to be found in folklore and in popular myths, legends, linguistic idioms, proverbial wisdom, and current jokes to a more complete extent than in dreams. Dr. Jung points out that he has borrowed his term archetype from classic sources, Cicero, Pliny, the Corpus Hermeticum, Augustine, etc. Bastian notes the correspondence of his own theory of elementary ideas with the Stoic concept of the logoi spermatikoi. The tradition of the subjectively known forms is, in fact, coextensive with the tradition of myth, and is the key to the understanding and use of mythological images, as will appear abundantly in the following chapters.
The archetypes to be discovered and assimilated are precisely those that have inspired throughout the annals of human culture the basic images of ritual, mythology, and vision. These eternal ones of the dream are not to be confused with the personally modified symbolic figures that appear in nightmare and madness to the still tormented individual. Dream is the personalized myth, myth, the depersonalized dream. Both myth and dream are symbolic in the same general way of the dynamics of the psyche. But in the dream, the forms are quirked by the peculiar troubles of the dreamer, whereas in myth, the problems and solutions shown are directly valid for all mankind. The hero, therefore, is the man or woman who has been able to battle past his personal and local historical limitations to the generally valid, normally human forms. Such a one's visions, ideas, and inspirations come pristine from the primary springs of human life and thought. Hence they are eloquent, not of the present disintegrating society and psyche, but of the unquenched source through which society is reborn. The hero has died as a modern man, but as eternal man, perfected, unspecific, universal man, he has been reborn. His second solemn task and deed, therefore, as Toynbee declares, and as all the mythologies of mankind indicate, is to return then to us, transfigured, and teach the lesson he has learned of life renewed.
It must be noted against Professor Toynbee, however, that he seriously misrepresents the mythological scene when he advertises Christianity as the only religion teaching this second task. All religions teach it, as do all mythologies and folk traditions everywhere. Professor Toynbee arrives at his misconstruction by way of a trite and incorrect interpretation of the Oriental ideas of Nirvana, Buddha, and Bodhisattva. Then, contrasting these ideals, as he misinterprets them, with a very sophisticated rereading of the Christian idea of the city of God. This is what leads him to the error of supposing that the salvation of the present world situation might lie in a return to the arms of the Roman Catholic Church.
A modern woman, describing a dream that she has had, writes,
"I was walking alone around the upper end of a large city through slummy, muddy streets lined with hard little houses. I did not know where I was, but liked the exploring. I chose one street which was terribly muddy and led across what must have been an open sewer. I followed along between rows of shanties, and then discovered a little river flowing between me and some high, firm ground where there was a paved street. This was a nice, perfectly clear river flowing over grass. I could see the grass moving under the water. There was no way to cross, so I went to a little house and asked for a boat. A man there said of course he could help me cross. He brought out a small wooden box, which he put on the edge of the river, and I saw at once that with this box I could easily jump across. I knew all danger was over, and I wanted to reward the man richly. In thinking of this dream, I have a distinct feeling that I did not have to go where I was at all, but could have chosen a comfortable walk along paved streets. I had gone to the squalid and muddy district because I preferred adventure, and having begun, I had to go on. When I think of how persistently I kept going straight ahead in the dream, it seems as though I must have known there was something fine ahead, like that lovely grassy river and the secure high paved road beyond. Thinking of it in those terms, it is like a determination to be born, or rather, to be born again, in a sort of spiritual sense. Perhaps some of us have to go through dark and devious ways before we can find the river of peace or the high road to the soul's destination.
The dreamer is a distinguished operatic artist, and like all who have elected to follow, not the safely marked general highways of the day, but the adventure of the special, dimly audible call that comes to those whose ears are open within as well as without, she has had to make her way alone, through difficulties not commonly encountered, through slummy, muddy streets. She has known the dark night of the soul, Dante's dark wood, midway in the journey of our life, and the sorrows of the pits of hell.
Through me is the way into the woeful city. Through me is the way into eternal woe. Through me is the way among the lost people. Dante's Inferno, words written over the gate of hell.
It is remarkable that in this dream, the basic outline of the universal mythological formula of the adventure of the hero is reproduced to the detail. These deeply significant motifs of the perils, obstacles, and good fortunes of the way we shall find inflected through the following pages in 100 forms. The crossing first of the open sewer.
Compare Dante, Inferno, a little brook, the redness of which still makes me shudder, which the sinful women share among them.
Then, of the perfectly clear river flowing over grass.
Compare Dante, Purgatorio, a stream which, with its little waves, was bending toward the left, the grass that sprang upon its bank. All the waters that are purest here on earth would seem to have some mixture in them compared with that which hides nothing.
The appearance of the willing helper at the critical moment, Dante's Virgil, and the high, firm ground beyond the final stream, the earthly paradise, the land over Jordan.
Those who in old time sang of the golden age and of its happy state, perchance, upon Parnassus, dreamed of this place. Here was the root of mankind innocent. Here is always spring and every fruit. This is the nectar of which each of them tells. Purgatorio.
These are the everlastingly recurrent themes of the wonderful song of the soul's high adventure, and each who has dared to hearken to and follow the secret call has known the perils of the dangerous, solitary transit.
A sharpened edge of a razor, hard to traverse, a difficult path is this, poets declare.
The dreamer is assisted across the water by the gift of a small wooden box, which takes the place in this dream of the more usual skiff or bridge. This is a symbol of her own special talent and virtue, by which she has been ferried across the waters of the world. The dreamer has supplied us with no account of her associations, so that we do not know what special contents the box would have revealed, but it is certainly a variety of Pandora's box, that divine gift of the gods to beautiful woman, filled with the seeds of all the trouble and blessings of existence, but also provided with the sustaining virtue, hope. By this, the dreamer crosses to the other shore. And by a like miracle, so will each whose work is the difficult, dangerous task of self-discovery and self-development be ported across the ocean of life. The multitude of men and women choose the less adventurous way of the comparatively unconscious civic and tribal routines. But these seekers, too, are saved by virtue of the inherited symbolic aids of society, the rites of passage, the grace-yielding sacraments, given to mankind of old by the Redeemers and handed down through millennia. It is only those who know neither an inner call nor an outer doctrine whose plight truly is desperate. That is to say, most of us today, in this labyrinth without and within the heart. Alas, where is the guide? That fond virgin, Ariadne, to supply the simple clue that will give us courage to face the Minotaur, and the means, then, to find our way to freedom when the monster has been met and slain. Ariadne, the daughter of King Minos, fell in love with the handsome Theseus the moment she saw him disembark from the boat that had brought the pitiful group of Athenian youths and maidens for the Minotaur. She found a way to talk with him and declared that she would supply a means to help him back out of the labyrinth if he would promise to take her away from Crete with him and make her his wife. The pledge was given. Ariadne turned for help then to the crafty Daedalus, by whose art the labyrinth had been constructed, and Ariadne's mother enabled to give birth to its inhabitant. Daedalus simply presented her with a skein of linen thread, which the visiting hero might fix to the entrance and unwind as he went into the maze. It is, indeed, very little that we need. But lacking that, the adventure into the labyrinth is without hope. The little is close at hand. Most curiously, the very scientist who, in the service of the sinful king, was the brain behind the horror of the labyrinth, quite as readily can serve the purposes of freedom. But the hero heart must be at hand. For centuries, Daedalus has represented the type of the artist-scientist, that curiously disinterested, almost diabolic human phenomenon, beyond the normal bounds of social judgment, dedicated to the morals not of his time, but of his art. He is the hero of the way of thought, single-hearted, courageous, and full of faith that the truth as he finds it shall make us free. And so now we may turn to him, as did Ariadne. The flax for the linen of his thread he has gathered from the fields of the human imagination. Centuries of husbandry, decades of diligent culling, the work of numerous hearts and hands have gone into the hackling, sorting, and spinning of this tightly twisted yarn. Furthermore, we have not even to risk the adventure alone, for the heroes of all time have gone before us. The labyrinth is thoroughly known. We have only to follow the thread of the hero path. And where we had thought to find an abomination, we shall find a god. Where we had thought to slay another, we shall slay ourselves. Where we had thought to travel outward, we shall come to the center of our own existence. Where we had thought to be alone, we shall be with all the world.